You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you son in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
Another week, another show.
Another week, another show. Another St. Patrick's Day coming up on Friday.
Holy moly. You know, every time St. Patrick's Day comes around, it sneaks up on me. And what really sneaks up on me, not to like, you know, divert the conversation right away, but that means that only a few days later, Maury Margo's birthday.
What day is the birthday for Maury Margo?
It's one of those. 21, March 21st, 2011.
Congratulations, man. 12 years.
12 years.
I don't think I've ever done anything for 12 straight years.
As I always say, six happy years at Maury Margo.
He's back, ladies and gentlemen.
It's great. I love it. Listen, I know we've been kicking off the episodes lately with some news, and here's some breaking news for you. And I don't think you've read this article, but the ChatGPT, they just came out with a fourth model. So ChatGPT-4 exists. And here's the thing. It has passed the LSATs, the SATs. And those are, you know, pretty kind of standardized tests. You'd think that, of course, an AI model would be able to pass those. However, it scored a whopping 92% on a test that's not so easily standardized, the Court of the Master Sommelier.
Wait, what?
Yeah, ChatGPT knows more about wine than you and me combined.
I mean, that doesn't really surprise me, but I don't know. It's so odd to think of a machine that doesn't even understand the concept of taste being able to just pick the right words out of a word salad and throw them on a page and pass the test with flying colors, it sounds like.
I mean, I guess what this says to me is that human beings are pretty predictable, even in a world that seems subjective. You know, we've already seen ChatGPT create all these art pieces. And I'm curious if it can be subjective enough to understand and at least, you know, put together words to pass the test of the Court of Master Sommeliers. Could it also be not just an art creation machine, but an art critic?
I mean, I suppose it could. I mean, it's the whole, you know, a computer that plays chess can beat some of the best human players there are, but like, it's not going to understand what chess is. It's not going to be able to, does it know that it's playing chess? And it's kind of the same thing with wine. Like, it's able to understand all of the words that human beings use around wine, but is it able to actually, like, it doesn't really have any idea of what the fuck wine is, which I think is really interesting. You know, it kind of reminds me of the best technique that I ever found for selling a wine that I really didn't care about. I was running an event at a brewery, mind you, and I was running the satellite bar, and I had this like very, very well curated selection of, you know, beers from all different types of the country. And like, you know, cause we were doing, it was a fundraiser for, a certain politician actually that was in the news earlier this year. I'll let you all glean which particular representative from California I'm talking about, but he's from the party of politicians that are not known for their intellectual curiosity about things, because everybody that came to support him had no interest whatsoever in the beers I had curated from this particular brewery. All they wanted was the red and the white wine that I just kind of threw on the back bar at the last minute. I'm like, yeah, in case anybody wants one of these. It was just over and over, red, white, red, white, red, white. And I got so tired of describing these things that at one point a woman came up to me and just goes, is this white wine a sweet wine? And I had this weird out-of-body experience where I just watched myself say to this woman, well, now, I'd say it has sweet notes, but I wouldn't call it a sweet wine. And I'm like watching myself say this. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm saying nothing. But the woman just goes, oh, that sounds great. I'll have that. And she takes it and walks away. And I'm like, I could do this for everything. I could do this for everything and just never have to actually work to sell anything to anybody again. And that's kind of the ChatGPT model. Like, you can, it can put together the right combination of letters and syllables and sounds to, air quotes, describe these wines, but it's not actually saying anything. I don't know what that says about the future of our jobs, Souther, but it's just kind of interesting to know that, like, maybe there is something that's always held in reserve for humans who can actually do these things and taste it and try it and experience it and communicate it. Or maybe, maybe we'll be like the luxury product. You know, if you want your, the robot's going to be doing the wine recommending for, like, I don't know, Food Lion, and we'll still be working at, you know, the La Bernardins of the world recommending wines. I don't know, maybe, or maybe we're all doomed. Time will tell.
Listen, a lot to unpack there and a lot to unpack still with ChatGPT as it continues to grow and get stronger and bigger. But I guess my thinking is it's fun, I think, for the makers of these things to put them to these tests. But when is it going to start getting used for, like, I don't know, what I would consider maybe borderline evil? Meaning, when are we going to have ChatGPT, stock pickers? When are we going to have ChatGPT, gamblers, you know, that they can generate, they can think much faster and more deeply than a human being about, like, which team is going to win? You know, when are we going to go down those roads?
I don't know. And I mean, part of me wonders if we're already kind of there. I mean, we use a lot of AI in our lives already, right? And there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, it's, what am I trying to say here? I read some study where in field after field after field across multiple different disciplines, human and AI pairings consistently outscored pairings of two humans and two AIs, which I think gives me hope. You know, the fact that there are things that these machines can do so much faster than us that we rely on them for. In fact, we rely on them every time we pull out the supercomputers we carry around in our pockets, right? But there's still going to be room for, you know, human judgment, human knowledge, human ability to taste wine and food and have some input on that. I don't know. I mean, it is scary. This is why a number of different countries and the EU currently have ambassadors to Silicon Valley, like actual people with diplomatic papers that are ambassadors to tech companies. But it's also weird, you know? I mean, we all remember the articles over the last, 20 years of, like, the robot bartenders are coming for your jobs. And we see these, like, faceless pyramids moving around behind the bar and, like, bumping into shit and, like, spitting out these terrible Manhattans. So at the very least, I think this particular field is safe. Like, maybe
if
not.
If they're coming for us, they're coming very slowly.
Yeah, exactly. The artists, the writers, the musicians, the screenwriters, everybody, you know, every creative out there needs to be really afraid right now. But us bartenders, we're gonna be just fine, Souther.
Nothing beats a bartender.
Oh yeah.
And also, you know, as fast as we're creating ChatGPT out there, we're equally creating, maybe not equally, but we're still out there creating human beings. I'm searching for a segue for you.
I love it.
He's in a virtual studio with us.
You think I'm gonna let you off the hook with that segue? You gotta introduce them now. You gotta show your work, Souther.
Sure. Well, in the virtual studio today, we've got Michelle and Sean from Kingfisher down in Durham, North Carolina. But Michelle also has with her, we can see her on the screen, little Claude, the newest addition to the team. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
I was waiting for Claude to answer first.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little noise from him. looks like he's being well cared for and pampered and sleeping, which is probably something you're not getting to do these days with that freshness around. You get enough?
I get enough.
Oh, good. Well, congratulations on that, and welcome to the studio again. You know, you guys and I have been chatting for a while. I looked back through our history. We started talking right near the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Back in 2020, we did an online, you know, Instagram Live or some sort of thing back then. And that's sort of where our relationship began. But let's talk a little bit about what you've got going on in Durham, North Carolina with your now three projects, Kingfisher being sort of the linchpin of them all, right?
Yeah. So we opened Kingfisher 3.5 years ago now, in late July of 2019. Kingfisher is a farm-driven cocktail bar. It's a really wonderful space that a lot of people have enjoyed over the years. Not to brag, I guess, but we also just got nominated
That's why we're here, Brad.
We got
that's what I'm here for.
We're nominated for a James Beard Award this year for Outstanding Bar, which was really wonderful for our team. During the pandemic, our bar's in a basement, as many cocktail bars seem to find themselves. And the first floor was being converted to a gluten-free bakery, which unfortunately wasn't able to continue construction. So we turned that into a neighborhood bar that serves like really just like fun beer, wine, cocktails, and food until 2 a.m. every day in Durham, which is a big change, maybe not for folks in New York to be able to eat late, but certainly having something reliable that's open all the time was something Michelle and I really wanted to commit to. And I'll let Michelle tell you more about that space as we go on. But we also, our big pandemic move was we created a burger shop in North Carolina. Bars, as defined by the ABC boards, weren't allowed to open at all. So we converted our whole concept into a backyard smash burger restaurant that, you know, we set up griddles outside and Michelle painted the whole area. We rolled out AstroTurf and we did that for a whole year to like sustain our staff and, you know, pay the bills. We served cocktails there too. And that became a really cool integral part of, I think, of Durham. It's called Queen Burger. And luckily, last year we took over a space down by our minor league baseball stadium, and Queen Burger now has a home where you can get a the best Negroni out of a lemonade bubbler you've ever had and a smash burger at the same time. So it's a really cool concept.
Wait a sec. Is it in the Bulls stadium?
Oh, so it's not in it, but it's along the left field wall. So if you were walking to the stadium, you would be able to go
right by it. That's incredible. I want to back up two steps. So you mentioned something about bars, the ABC not allowing bars to open. Was that during the pandemic? Is that what you meant?
Right. During the pandemic, there was the way that the government defined everything and broke, you know, like what can open, what has capacity limits, was based on your ABC permitting. And we have a special permit down here. It's actually now defunct, but it was called a private club, which was the Southern definition of a bar. And those were just sort of like, you can't open no matter what. So we had to figure out something to do. So we basically just started a new business behind the bar.
Wow.
Right. So all these things are almost in a complex. You're downstairs. Queens is up.
Queens is on top of it. And then the burger shop's maybe like 3 blocks away.
Okay. Got it. That's great.
So just out of curiosity, what's to stop someone from doing the Homer Simpson thing of like, you know, opening a bar in his garage and being like, bar? I see no bar. This is a hunting club. You know, it's like, what bar is? Clearly, this is a hamburger restaurant, my good sir. Like, where was the line there? And what were some of the, I don't know. The pandemic workarounds are always fascinating to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Michelle and I will ever have as high level of discussions with folks in the city and state government as we did trying to like be like, this is how we interpret this order, you know, decree or whatever. Right. Eventually we got enough people that would like sign off or turn a blind eye and, you know, were willing to say these are extraordinary times. So maybe there's some extraordinary measures, but I don't think they would allow for the same Homer Simpson bar in 2023.
Yeah. Michelle, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, one of the focuses of the bar, I understand from the things I've read over time, is a lot about the design, and you are integral to that, and up to and including even glassware. You're making some glassware or serviceware at least?
Yes. I make some cocktail glasses that we use for our signature cocktail, the B Durham. They're just simple little short rocks glasses with a little bit of texture on one side. And I also make shot glasses with our logo on them. And the bar top is actually tiles that I made one by one with a pattern running throughout them.
As a guy who has and has had many tile top bars, that sounds daunting right there.
Yeah, they're hexagonal tiles with like a river pattern running through them. And there's probably about 3,000 of them. There were definitely some tears involved in that. and the completion, of that project. But yeah, we wanted to really integrate design and taste into our bar. So it's really a holistic concept. And I think the ceramic glassware just adds a little extra piece of, you know, delight for people coming in and getting handed that as something different that they don't get in a lot of places.
Yeah, that sounds very unique. Can you dig a little deeper into what you mean when you say a holistic experience in a cocktail bar? Like what other methods are you employing to make that a reality?
Yeah, so as a basement bar, it really is a transformative experience, I think, to walk downstairs from the outside. The front of our building is ugly. It's this old beat up brick facade. You walk in through these office doors and then you start down the stairs. And I painted the stairwell with a gradient of blue that gets a deeper, darker blue as you go down. And then you open the door into Kingfisher and it's just this environment that you probably wouldn't expect from the outside. It's this beautiful jewel tone colors. It's really dark down there. There's some warm wood tables and a warm wood accent wall. So just from walking in, your expectations, I think, are changed by the environment that you're walking into. It's a beautiful space. We paid a ton of attention to detail. It's a very personal space. I have not only created the bar top, but I also have a couple of my grandmother's paintings in the space, and my father is a photographer, and there's a whole wall featuring pictures of mushrooms that he took on our local river here. And then one of my friends who lives on a farm is also a carpenter, and he built the tables out of this gorgeous reclaimed wood. So it's a very personal, detail-oriented space, and I think that sets the tone where you're expecting something really good from the cocktails before you even get them.
And then, Sean, you mentioned a minute ago something that you don't hear often when we talk about bars, more, I think, is in tune with the restaurant lingo. You said farm-driven cocktail bar. Now, I used to live in North Carolina, and I worked in kitchens back then, and I understand that, well, having lived in 12 states and cooked in 11 of them, I always say the place that had the best, sources of foods coming out of the ground was North Carolina. And I have a lot of stories about how farmers would come to the back door of the restaurant and just knock on the door and say, I just picked a whole truckload of corn. Do you want it? And we'd of course say yes or what have you. So let's talk a little bit about farm to drink. What's going on when you say that?
Yeah. I think that was a kind of a decision that we concluded on, I think based on a lot of how Michelle and I eat for sure. And the culture that had been built up in Durham, especially in its food scene prior to its opening, was so connected with local farms and like being resourceful and respectful of the products you're getting. And then I think lastly, North Carolina has a lot of great qualities, but it is not, you would be hard pressed to open an Amore Amargo here. The access to esoteric.
I was hard pressed to do it in New York.
your back bar would just be much smaller. You'd have to rely on just Campari a lot more. But the access, because we're a control state, is just not quite as broad.
Sure.
We certainly have more than enough liquor to make a bar, but there isn't an angle where I felt like, you would have to really spend so much time sourcing to open a mezcal bar here. And they do it, but it's like building a deep wine program. It takes years to like really do right. So I think we also thought letting farms lead the way and produce and flavors really gives us an opportunity to do something distinct and kind of constantly creative. So on that note, we try and roll with the seasons. We're really big on if we can get it here locally or sourced well, we'll take it. And if we can, we'll preserve it. And in the winter, we'll figure out, what we're working with. We're not a bar where you'll find pineapples or coconuts often, or really maybe ever. But we do try and really present produce as the reason for us making drinks. And I think that's led to some really interesting creative cocktails that come out of here, because we're always searching for a new mechanism to extract flavor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that boundaries elevate creativity, right?
Yeah. for sure.
So what, I mean, speaking of boundaries, what does that look like now? Like what is, I mean, in the, it's easy to imagine what that might look like in the summertime when like, you know, everything's, you know, bountiful. Ripe and bountiful. Thank you. That was the B word I was searching for. I was like blossoming. No, but yeah, when all the fruit is like juicy and tasty and delicious and you can pick it right off the tree and eat it. But like this time of year, what does that look like? What do y'all feature on your menu? And do you have to work a little bit harder to maintain this concept in the wintertime when everything's kind of frozen and gross?
We definitely have to work harder in the wintertime. It helps if we have worked hard in the summertime. So we have part of our menu, which is our preserved cocktail series, which is done with all ingredients that we figured out how to, you know, save from the summer. So we created a black cherry tomato jam that we, you know, canned and held.
Ooh.
And now that's in this sort of hard to describe, stirred vaguely Bloody Mary, but not like nighttime sipper. You know, other things we've done, it's as much as there's a now defunct farm called Four Leaf Farm that had one lemon tree and we bought all the lemons off them 1 year. We juiced the lemons and we made like a special cocktail for them one night. And then we, you know, peeled the lemons and made, it wasn't a limoncello, but it was, you know, basically the lemon oil extract. And then we would figure out how to make that the centerpiece of the cocktail. So that becomes like, you know, the star. So we're pretty resourceful on that front. But there are a couple things here that are always available, like sweet potatoes. Our bar manager, Casey Liebes, if she was on your show, she would nerd out about the way sugar reacts and give you a million, like a deep dive into amylase and stuff. But she basically spent 6 months figuring out how to really make sweet potato into a shining star cocktail ingredient that doesn't come off as starchy or nothing. She has a stirred cocktail. It's called Mr. Sweet Potato, which is a pretty bland name, but it's the name of the guy. It was the nickname of the guy who bred the Covington Sweet Potato, which is like our main potato down here. But it's a stirred sort of old fashioned style drink, but it just pops with sweet potato. And I think that's actually a really good example of the cocktails we make, which are like, if we say it tastes like this, like we really want it to taste like that. Like we want to hit you over the head with the flavors that we're looking to extract.
That's amazing. Although I have to say, not to Monday morning quarterback this, but Mr. Sweet Potato Head, did that not,
I mean, yeah,
was that not on the idea board?
Kingfisher is really great at a lot of things. I think we would not be nominated for best cocktail names ever. If I could get away with it, we might be the place that just calls it Sweet Potato or Number One or something like that. Sure. It's a little pretentious maybe for our vibe.
The Mace model.
Yeah.
Listen, it sounds to me like you do a deep dive, Michelle, on making the space interactive or, more immersive. Obviously, the drinks rolling out from behind the bar are doing the same thing, going deeply with, reaching out to farms and buying them out of lemons or preserving things because winter is coming. I would like to ask, though, and this may be an esoteric question that has no real answer, but like what, in a market like Durham, North Carolina, what's the appreciation level that you're getting from your guests? Like, do they appreciate the depth and the lengths that you're going to?
I think they really do. I think people wouldn't, we sort of like to say we made the bar that we wanted to drink at. And we hoped there were other people who didn't know what they wanted, but that they would want the same thing. And I think Durham is already such a close-knit community. And the farmer's market was already this bustling, wonderful place where everybody went and ran into each other every weekend. I think all of that coming together in this, you know, and I think the cocktail scene was gaining strength and getting bigger. But when we put that all together, I think people really appreciated it and really were like, oh, we didn't know that you could do this. But I think they love it. And Durham is a very artistic town. So I think the appreciation for the aesthetics was there immediately. And I think people were surprised and really happy to have this cohesive thing show up.
Yeah, I would add that we are in a town that has been, I think, pushing like really great food for, 15 years, that had really set the table in terms of you know, what people were ready for flavor wise or ready to read on a menu. And then I do want to shout out our very close friend and neighbor, Shannon Healy, who owns Alley 26, which is right across the street from our bar. They've been making amazing cocktails and especially creating like a baseline of appreciation for well-crafted cocktails in this town for over 10 years now. And that, I think that also really helps set the table for us to do something boundary pushing and creative or a little more like specifically directional.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the pattern always is sort of food lands first. And then, you know, after a couple of generations of people working under the people who started that, breaking off and opening their own places, then in comes this sort of drink parade. And I think that, you know, Durham's ripe for that. I lived there and worked there when it was definitely a food town burgeoning. You know, I worked for both Ben Barker and Scott Howell down there at the Magnolia and Pops and some shifts at Nana's here and there. But I asked that question with knowing the answer already, because it seems that, you know, the proof's in the pudding, as they say. You're all over the press. You've been nominated for, as you mentioned earlier, a James Beard Award. You've been recognized by Tales of the Cocktail. Plenty of outlets have written about you. So you're doing the right thing. But I want to come back and talk a little bit more about the things that have spun off and the things that you're doing now. But we've got to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Sean and Michelle from Kingfisher down in Durham. Stay tuned, everybody.
Every glass of wine tells a story. And these stories reveal hidden histories, flavors, passions, and sometimes they unravel our darkest desires. In Wine Enthusiast's newest podcast, Vinfamous, journalist Ashley Smith dissects the underbelly of the wine world. We hear from the people who know what it means when the product of love and care becomes the source of greed, arson, even murder. Each episode takes listeners into the mysterious and historic world of winemaking and the crimes that have since become, well, Vinfamous. This podcast pairs well with wine lovers, history nerds, and crime junkies. So grab a glass of your favorite and follow the podcast to join as we delve into the twists and turns behind the all-time most shocking wine crimes. Follow Vinfamous on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and be sure to follow the show so you never miss a scandal. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we are back. You are listening to The Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Today we have Sean and Michelle from Kingfisher, Queen Burger, and Queenie's down in Durham, North Carolina, home of the Durham Bulls. We were just talking about that a little bit during the break. I always like whenever I get the opportunity to hijack this podcast briefly and turn it into a baseball-based show. But I was really stoked to hear that y'all had opened up a spot that was, you know, right there, if I ever wind up back at that stadium, going to another Durham Bulls game again, which I've been to before. Lovely minor league stadium, lovely little part of the town and the state. And I wanted to ask a little bit about, I feel like I can use this word again, because we haven't had to say it nearly as much in 2023 as we have for the 3 years prior to it. But I wanted to hear a little bit about the pivot from Kingfisher to Queens, Queenie's, and Queen Burger, and kind of what that was like for y'all, and how you eventually settled on, okay, so, you know, we can't open up a bar. What do we want to do next? What is this? How are we going to turn these constraints into creativity? I want to hear a little bit about kind of the process behind that. And also the name, because I hear the name has an interesting story too.
Yeah. So the way that all of these things happened, I think some people in town maybe think we really pushed to like do new stuff, but it was pretty organic. So Kingfisher had been open for 8 months when the pandemic began, which was wild, but truthfully, like we were talking about, yeah, we were talking earlier about whether Durham embraced us or not. Durham had embraced us so much that we actually were in a decent position going into that, which is kind of striking after 8 months. So we closed, and as many people did, we sort of waited with bated breath on like whether this is a temporary thing or a long thing. And Michelle and I quickly started to do this virtual happy hour. So at every day at 4:30, we would get on Instagram Live and teach people how to make drinks. And after we did it for 100 days in a row, and that's where we talked Souther, Michelle and I. We all chatted on there, and we'd have great guests from all over the country that would just like come on and talk. Dave Arnold and Kara Newman and friends in different places. Joe Stinchcomb in Oxford, Mississippi. And I don't know, it was really fun. And then we kind of, I think Michelle and I came to the realization that one, that wasn't going to pay the bills and this was going to be a long thing. Two, getting mildly drunk at 4:30 every day is not super healthy.
That's why this is only a weekly podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then I had taught 100 days of cocktails, and I said, I think I'm out. I don't know how much more I could teach the general public. But it was really cool. And I think Michelle would say this as well. The best thing that came out of it was we had, you know, 30 people who were like dedicated tune-in people, and it became like a community. I think one of the coolest things we did during that period, and not to go on a too long a tangent, was we did this like safe pottery class, basically. And Michelle left bags of clay out behind the bar for our like loyal, like tuner inners, I guess, to come get. And then she taught everyone on the show how to make like a pinch pot shot glass. And they all made them. And then they brought them back, left them behind the bar again. And then Michelle took them to her studio, fired them. And now there are like 25 like homemade, like little shot, ceramic shot cups that are like all super personal. Some people are incredibly good at it. Someone made the best Kingfisher out of clay I'd ever seen. Michelle, wow. I've never seen her try to do one. I'm sure hers would be better, but like, and now they're just like up there at the bar. And if they come in, they can use it and, you know, drink out of. So I think that like that was a big cool jumping off point for us to figure out what to do next. So, you know, I think we had two issues. One was we couldn't open the bar and we didn't have a kitchen to operate out of, like with a hood. So we couldn't create like a product inside that we could sell reliably. We did, you know, cocktail kits and we did all this stuff, but it was always like way too band-aid-y and not quite stopgap enough, especially for our employees, who honestly saved the business. You know, many of them decided to work when they could have just taken the huge unemployment bump, and didn't. And a lot of them, I mean, many of them are still with us, which, you know, I'm sure I don't say enough, but like this place is open because like 6 or 7 people decided to stick around and work in the rain, basically. So with that said, we got all together and Michelle and I kind of came up with a new concept, which was Smash Burgers. For some reason, Smash Burgers were having a real moment during that time. I love, I might mispronounce his name, but Moats is his last name. He has the burger show. Mm-hmm. He's so funny and so creative. And we basically just YouTubed our way to making like a burger that we thought we could do. And I think burgers were a great avenue for us because I wasn't sure we'd ever be able to hire like a cook or anyone with any kitchen background, and we only had bartenders that worked for us. So a burger, if you really think about it, especially a smash burger, is as much a system and like a rhythm that you can get in, like being behind a bar, as it is cooking. Like, it's not so much like, can I tell if this burger's done, or can I build this sauce, or do I need all this like different technique? It's like smash, smash, cheese, onions, duh, 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 duh. Like, it's like a rhythm. And once you get in the rhythm, it almost feels like when you're in that really great flow state behind a bar where, like, you know, you're the somehow the master of the universe and everything could be going wrong, but you're just like picking up the right bottle and not thinking about it. And, you know, so we set up a Blackstone griddle. We, like, you know, Michelle painted this huge mural. We bought some like used AstroTurf that we laid over this grungy parking lot, and put out tables and spread them out and had people like enter down this alley that happens to be behind a hotel next to us. And for a year, through rain or shine, and especially early on, like if it was raining, people would just eat the burger like under their table that we didn't even give them chairs for, because we wanted them to, we weren't sure how long anyone should spend together. So they just sit under the, they'd sit under this high top table and like eat a burger because they were just like starved for social interaction. I don't know. And it just became this like great thing. We tried to keep it honest and true to Kingfisher. So we sourced, we worked with this farm that's 45 minutes down the road to did like a custom beef blend for us. This like high fat grass fed beef. We get cheese from Ashe County Cheddar, which is like up near the Virginia border, but it's North Carolina cheese we slice every day. Michelle kind of used her recollection of a veggie burger she made a long time at another restaurant. We have a really great veggie burger. And then we did cocktails. So now where it is now, is a physical location that, so it's I'm really rambling, but to touch on the name Queen Burger, we named it Queen Burger because our bar was called Kingfisher, but obviously there's a king and a burger related restaurant chain in the world. So, but we wanted the name to be very quickly indicative of what we were doing. So we went the other way, and went with Queen Burger. And now Queen Burger exists in a really great spot down by our ballpark. The doors open all the way, so like we can basically open the whole storefront. We've got AstroTurf out front there. Michelle had had our contractors dye the concrete inside green. The same murals painted in there. It feels, it's got string lights, and we do just like, we still do smash burgers and cocktails. So, you know, you can get an incredible, the cheapest and very good Negroni out of a lemonade bubbler that we just dispense and serve. We got beer, we got wine, we got, you know, charred jalapeno margaritas. So we try and take like the ethos of what we do at Kingfisher, just fresh and delicious and balanced cocktails, and just do them in a kind of quick service environment. And I, you know, I think it's worked really well. That reason. And so I'll shut up now and let Michelle chime in, but to segue to her, the other space we have is called Queenie's. And the name, it's called Queenie's because we thought it happened before Queen Burger, and we thought Queen Burger was going to evolve into Queenie's, which was going to be how we kept the brand, but took it beyond just being one smash burger. So, you know, on a food concept, Queenie's is a neighborhood bar and grill style restaurant. So it's, you know, Americana classics that are like done at, like that are chefed up or chefy. That burger was going to be the centerpiece. So we wanted to save the name, but make it a little bit more like, you know, a mythical grandmother that it was named after. But now it's instead just very confusing to say all of them quickly and for anybody to, you know, go where they're, you know where they're going. But Michelle is the lead of Queenie's and can certainly tell you more about that awesome concept.
So Michelle, do you have more cooks at Queenie's than, are there still bartenders making the smash burgers at the Queen's Burger?
No, we have a chef here, Jorge Ruiz, who's doing a great job. And we have, bigger menu, sort of elevated bar food. We made a point to have a couple of big salads on the menu. So you can eat healthy at 2 a.m. if you really want to.
And that's great.
I always tell myself at 10 p.m. that I'm going to eat healthy at 2 a.m., but it never really works out that way, does it?
Yeah, we don't sell a lot of salads past probably 10.
Yeah, the product mix suggests that salads are an aspirational thing at 2 a.m. too, not a thing.
Yeah, but you can't take it off the menu or otherwise there's revolt, right? People want the choice. They just don't want to choose it.
Yes, exactly.
So what is the sort of ethos and drive at Queenie's then? What's the cuisine and what's the cocktail pairings like?
Yeah, so we're much more casual. We wanted to be a neighborhood bar that's open all the time. We're open 7 days a week. Claude's going to chime in here.
That's great. It's radio. Nobody can see him. He's got to be heard.
Yeah, that's what happens when you bring the head of PR on sometimes. They always have notes for whatever you're saying.
Yep. So we also, the space was an old bank and law office. So there are a couple of side rooms, including a large safe, which I'm currently in. We turned it into a podcast recording studio. it's got these. So we wanted to be a community space that people could use for all sorts of different things.
I want to touch on that. I want to touch on that too. So you're allowing the community to use this space. Do they rent it, or is it just you clock out the time and you get that time?
Yeah, it's free. There's just a calendar online. So you just sign up for your slot and you come in and use it. You can bring your own equipment. We have some very basic equipment in here. I soundproofed the room. I mean, it's already 2 foot thick concrete around the room. It has double doors to make it extra quiet. And then I built these panels to fill the room to absorb any echoing sounds. Sounds really good. And people have been using it more and more. It's really great to see people come in here, and some people record music, some people do podcasts, some people just record a conversation with a person that they want to have.
I absolutely love this idea. Amazing.
Yeah. And even people that don't use it, you know, I think it really benefits us that people like seeing that it's here. It's just a good thing to have for the community. We had the space to do it. Now, our staff occasionally, I think, would wish that we had a little more storage instead of piling things up here and there in every nook and cranny. But I think it's a great addition to the space. And then we also have another room that I turned into a bookshop that is sort of a library bookshop. You can take the books and just read them here, or you can buy them and take them home. And that's another little spot. I built a window seat in there. You can just cozy up in there and spend some time in there. It's another spot that, you know, if you're here by yourself, waiting for friends, it's a great, or you're just in a loud bar and you're overwhelmed, you can go in there. It's a funny little spot for introverts to go hang out in, or people to just go in and grab a book, grab their friends. It's a good conversation starter.
Cool. That's incredible. I really can't wait to get down there and check it out. And honestly, I'm already thinking about hijacking this community podcast idea. We've got a space that might be the right thing for something like that, and we've been trying to figure out what to do with it. So this is, you're sparking ideas for me. But
I thought you were talking about hijacking their studio. I was like, okay, sweet, road trip, here we go.
Yeah, come on.
That too. We can go down and catch a game at the stadium, grab a smash burger, and record a podcast down there. Man, it's been really great having the three of you on with us today. young Claude chiming in, his first podcast of many, I'm sure. Have you got anything coming up in the near future that you want to talk about real quickly before we wrap the show?
Whew. No, we've been opening restaurants quickly. We did Queen Burger and Queenie's within a year of each other. I think we're really excited to be, you know, still here and a part of Durham and growing with Durham. It's a wonderful town. I always tell people that maybe have never been here, that if you need like a quick weekend trip that you want to be food and beverage centric, post up in downtown Durham. It is so walkable. You've got 20, 25 amazing like food and beverage outlets like within 4 blocks, 5 blocks of each other. It's incredibly walkable. Catch a ball game. I know I'm pumping Durham a little bit, but it really is like an incredible town to operate in, an incredible town to live in, and an incredible town to visit. I think all our spots are amazing, but I think if you'd be hard pressed to throw a baseball around here and not hit a restaurant that was worth going to, or bar.
Yeah, I haven't been there in quite a long time, and I would agree. Plus, it's just a beautiful part of the country, frankly. Well, listen, really great to have both of you on the show today to talk about everything you're doing down there at Kingfisher, Queenie's, and Queen Burger. And you can be found at Kingfisher Durham, all one word, on Instagram. You got Instagram for the burger shop as well?
Yeah, the burger shop is Eat Queen Burger, and then Queenie's is Queenie's Durham.
Right on. We'll get those in the show notes and up on social media, and we'll tag you and everything like that. But we have to wrap it up. That's it for this episode of the Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Please tune in for many more shows just like this one. Head over to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the donate button where you can donate to keep shows just like ours on air. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in once again. Cheers, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers, everybody. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. It's gonna get you-